Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Kevin is nearing 50. And I am the age he was when I healed him of testicular cancer 15 years ago. He swooped me into his life out of a jumble of relief, gratitude, and zealous and jealous love. I had gratitude of my own, being out from under the care and protection and triangular tension of my family and that wild-eyed priest, Father Hansen, who thought I was going to be his ticket to Rome. Hi. This is G.P. Gottlieb, host of New Books in Literature for the New Books Network. Today I'm talking to Susan Smith Daniels, author of The Genuine Stories, a novel told in stories that take place across the years about a woman who can, most of the time, heal the most vicious diseases and conditions solely by touch. Genuine Erickson's gift of healing appeared when she was a child, and it has dictated the course of her life. But sometimes her great gift can feel like a curse. This is a parable about how even the most wonderful gift or ability can turn into a negative, scary burden. Author Susan Daniels earned an MFA from Fairfield University and is currently pursuing her PhD at Bath Spa University. Let's get to it. Hi, Susan. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Galit. Thank you so much for asking me.
Let's start by talking about how you came to write this book.
I was beginning to write fiction after a short career in journalism and was applying to MFA programs. And so the first story in this book, The Possum Days, was one of the first short stories I wrote. I had been working on a novel and I decided that it might be better if I wrote a variety of stories for my MFA applications. So that's how I started. And then during that process, that year before I started my MFA, I wrote a couple of the other stories. And then when I attended school at Fairfield University, I decided that perhaps I had a lot of stories to tell about Genuine. And that's how the book got started.
She's really a wonderful character. Have you ever experienced any kind of the immediate healing that you describe in the book?
Not in the way that Genuine does, but after a bout with breast cancer when I was 45, I decided I wanted to go back to school, and I went to nursing school. And what I learned there was that a very small amount of kindness and a little bit of touch went a long way. And it was kind of shocking to me how much difference you can make in a person's life with just a little touch.
And there must have been a certain amount of wishful thinking that somebody could touch you and make the cancer go away.
Absolutely.
That would have been nice.
That would have been nice, yes.
So the story collection starts with Genuine and her boyfriend, Kevin, driving while on vacation in California. And that's where we learn that she has the ability to heal with her hands. So why does she hide her ability to heal even after she saves a child's life?
Well, the ability itself comes with some responsibility that others, as she learned as a child, would like to co-opt. And she has had enough experience like that where she wants to maintain her own private life. She wants to enjoy as much of a normal life as possible. And that requires that she hide from the public whenever she can and not get into, you know, a big notoriety situation.
I found it disturbing that she had to do so much to hide from people.
Yes, I think it, and I haven't stated this outright in any of the stories, but the backstory is that there was a time where she was very proud and public about it, and that created so much attention that she realized that that was a distraction to what she really wanted to do. And it really interfered with her life and her life with her boyfriend, Kevin. And it affected her parents and her siblings, and not in a good way.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of interesting characters that come up again and again. But let's go back to the second story where her parents are about to give birth to her. And then could you talk about how she turns into, how they name her Genevieve, how she turns into Genuine, and a little bit about her childhood?
Yes. So I had children in the 70s. I think my husband and I were very much like Genuine's parents in that we had an idea, like most hippies and post-hippies did, that we were going to change the world and maybe one child at a time, you know. And there is this kind of awe that you have when you have your first child and you can't believe that, you know, you have, you created this wonderful creature. So you put a lot of emphasis on how they're going to turn out and a lot of wishful thinking on the way their life is going to be. And I wanted to play with that idea. You know, what would happen, as in any case with children, they always do things you don't expect and rarely turn out the way you had planned for them. What would happen if an ability was something that you knew nothing about, that was beyond your control and beyond your understanding, really? So in that story, The Philosophy of Parenting, I really wanted to sort of examine, you know, sort of her genuine sort of origin stories, you know, how her parents viewed her. She was a challenging toddler. She was a challenging child. And how, you know, and then they had two more children, and just kind of give an overview of what that hectic early parenthood life is like and what it was like in that particular time in history. Because I think parenting is different now. And so I was just examining that.
Mm-hmm. How did you decide to make Genuine's eyebrows and odd dark hair such an important part of her identity?
Well, you know, it's very interesting because in the very first story, because Possum Days was the very first story, and in Possum Days, because it was a short story, I gave more background than is in the book in that story. I had to take a lot of the redundancies out when we put the book together. So I used her hair as a striking feature that people might notice. And in that first story, I had the idea that she would have to shave her head every time she went to California because her hair grew really fast, or she would bleach it so nobody would notice. And then also, then when I wrote Philosophy of Parenting, I already had that idea that she had this, you know, very noticeable hair and striking looks that were maybe slightly off kilter with the thick eyebrows, but also very attractive. But also Genuine as a child was very self-possessed and very proud of her looks. And they, you know, it came to be kind of a schoolyard thing where she might have been taunted, but she was a very, you know, she's very self-composed as a child and very self-assured.
Mm-hmm. And now we're in the third story, The Healer. You have a wonderful description of how her parents learn about her gift of healing. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So I had to think, like, what if your child said they could do something that was way beyond your imagination for anything in the real world? And what if they couldn't prove it? And this is what happened with Genuine. She, a schoolyard bully, it kind of coaxed her into doing something. And you know, he hit somebody and she went to help the child and her hands got warm and the child's cut went away. And so it was this little miracle that happened in the schoolyard. And she came home to tell her parents about it. And of course, they didn't believe her. They just thought it was a fantasy. She was going to a Catholic school where, you know, the stories of the saints were taught. And then she couldn't repeat the performance for her parents or for anybody else. So it set up this really long, frustrating time in her life as a child and a really difficult time for her parents to deal with it psychologically.
Right. And then the parents are, why are they thinking about religious affiliation for Genuine? Why is that something of such concern to them?
Well, her parents, when Genuine was born, they were both agnostics. And her mother had gone to Catholic school and was raised Catholic, but was no longer Catholic. And her father wasn't interested in his Lutheran background, very much like, you know, hippies in the 70s, you know, very, very much. We sort of turned away from whatever our parents were doing. But when she had this ability, I think it rang a bell with her mother, thinking, wait a minute, maybe I was wrong. Maybe there is something here. Maybe I should turn back to religion. And in fact, in the way that I think of this story, her mother did. Mm-hmm. Start going back to the church. And it was a point of contention between her and her husband, Bo, because he did not want the Catholic Church to control his child or have anything to do with his child.
Right. There was an issue with Father Hansen.
Yes, Father Hansen, who had his own story. And one of those stories I actually wrote didn't make it into the collection, but Father Hansen had his own backstory where he was sent to Iowa from the East Coast. He felt sort of isolated and didn't really like his surroundings. And there was no way for him to kind of advance in his career because priests have careers. You know, they go on to become, you know, monsignors and bishops and whatnot. And so with Genuine's ability, he felt like he could use that to get notice in the church. And he actually did take her on a trip with her mother to Rome when she was 18. And that didn't go well. But that story has not been published yet.
Ah, okay. So we have more to hear from about Genuine.
Absolutely.
What do we learn about the story in which Genuine heals the sick elderly woman who comes to the church?
That story is really about Alice Dunphy. I like exploring people in general. I like exploring the ways that people feel at various times in their lives. And Alice Dunphy was only turning 70, but she knew that she was going to die soon, and she was feeling kind of frustrated about it and feeling very reflective about her life and where it had led her. And because she was so tied to this church and the Monsignor who had been her friend for a long time, she was actually constrained. And her son, who was her doctor, and everybody telling her what to do, and, you know, she shouldn't get out of her chair and this kind of thing. And so when Genuine shows up and she doesn't know who she is, and she doesn't really know that Genuine healed her when she did, but she's just so taken with her forthrightness and her unusual looks and the idea that the Sister Dorothy, the principal, is trying to constrain the child. She recognizes that there's a story there that she doesn't know. And Genuine actually does heal her, but she doesn't know it. She just starts feeling better all of a sudden.
Yeah. So Genuine starts out in this relation, in the first story, she's in a relationship with Kevin. Can you talk about her reaction and feelings about him from the minute they met, and their whole metamorphosis.
Yeah. So Jenyon was 18 when she met Kevin. She lied to him and said she was nearly 20. He came to Iowa from Philadelphia to get healed. He had testicular cancer. His fiancée had some connections, even though it was somewhat hush-hush with the church. The church collected money on behalf of her healings to go to various charities or whatever. And so Kevin came, and we can see that Jenyon was at a time where she was getting quite frustrated with the constraints in her life, like any teenager would. And I think she was looking for a way out. And she liked Kevin. She shook his hand. She could feel the healing warmth. She knew she could heal him. And she invited him up to her room to talk, and under the idea that, you know, she needed to continue to heal him. And Kevin didn't know that, but he was intrigued, and she just set her sights on him. I think she knew that he was the person who would help her get away. And he did. He did. And they had a long relationship.
He helped her get away, but she never talks about him as the love of her life.
No, she doesn't. And that's, you know, that's a thing with relationships. And very often when I'm writing, I consider who has the power in a relationship, and how much the love kind of gives way to power. And I think when they were young, she was really in love with him. But things happen, you know. Their life becomes constrained because she's doing all this healing and he's managing that. And she's not sure that she wants to have children. She's not sure that she wants to step outside of who she is. And as she gets older, she realizes she's never not going to heal people. Mm-hmm. And Kevin can't see a way that she can heal people and they can have a normal life. So it becomes this thing between them, you know, this stretching string that basically breaks after a while. I don't want to give away too much, but. Mm-hmm.
So Randy and Claire show up in several stories. Can you discuss what's going on there? What motivates Jenyon, the whole, how she chooses, who she's healing? So Randy and Claire.
Yeah, so Randy and Claire. So the first story I wrote about Randy and Claire was the Four Seasons, where Randy had brought Claire, his wife, to get healed by this young healer. And Jenyon was quite young at the time. She was barely 20, I think. And she and Kevin were experimenting with charging a lot of money for people. And, you know, people would come to the hotel and Jenyon would insist that they do a couple for free, but they were making their living doing this. And she wasn't ashamed of that. She felt like no matter what she did, somebody was going to, you know, make money on this thing that this ability of hers. And so Randy shows up with his wife, who he says was in an accident, but he really wasn't. She really wasn't. I don't like to give too much of it away, but we'll say it was Jenyon's first experience with spousal abuse. Mm-hmm. And she actually did heal Claire, but Randy, she didn't have a lot of feeling for. And part of what happens in these stories is I attempt to kind of go to a place where there is a serious question of ethics, I would say. And what do you do? If you were a doctor or a nurse and you had to take care of some serial murderer or something, you know, it'd be challenging, but you have that Hippocratic oath. But Jenyon, who doesn't know where her power comes from and doesn't think that it's tied to anything in particular, because she can never really figure out why it works sometimes and sometimes it doesn't, notices that Randy is probably sick when she meets him. And even though, and he hadn't hired her to heal him, but it's something that only she knows, but she decides to pull her hand away before she heals him. And then, so that's just my way of sort of unknotting those particular questions of how do you handle these really, you know, interesting moral issues. And because she's young, I wanted to write her as a young person who hadn't faced a lot of this yet. And, you know, when you read the story, you can kind of see how it turns out. But the next story, which is Cece, is really about, this very funny, wry law assistant in a law office. And I don't name Genuine and Kevin when they come in to get legal advice, and I don't name Randy and Claire when they come in to fill out Randy's will and such. And I have to say, I like using my characters over and over. I get to like them, and I want to see them in different situations, you know. So I kind of wanted to follow that situation with Randy, like what happens when he really does get sick, and how is his relationship with Claire, and how's Claire going to come out in the end?
Cece was a great character. She was a riot.
Thank you.
And that was third person. She had nothing to do with any of them. She was watching from afar.
Right, right.
Can you introduce us to another couple that also show up in several stories, Lillian and Fred?
Yes. So Lillian and Fred, the first story I wrote was Lillian and Fred and Alejandro. And that appears towards the end of the book. And the second story about Lillian and Fred appears at the beginning because I wanted to write their origin story. And actually, Lillian and Fred are mentioned in the very first story as as owning the cottage where Genuine and Kevin stay when they're on vacation in California. Mm-hmm. So we spend some time every year in Rancho Santa Fe. We have a condo there, and I'm not from that area, and it was interesting to me to watch this sort of very exclusive enclave of very wealthy people. I mean, I'll have to say we live in an adjacent area. It's not our hometown. But I was just so interested in the culture there. There are a lot of older people. Since I wrote that story, a lot of younger couples and families. There are families everywhere, but there's a certain culture in that particular generation, in that particular part of the country. They are landowners. They're mostly in, you know, the financial services. They're very wealthy. But they grew up at a time that was basically my mother's generation, I would think. So the mores were different and the expectations were different. And I liked playing with the idea of, again, who has the power in the relationship. Mm-hmm. In a long relationship, the power goes back and forth. No, it's just the way it works. I like these kinds of stories. I'm a big fan of Alice Munro. So, you know, I think I take a lot of my cues from the way that she examines relationships. And so I wanted to explore that area. It's a beautiful area. I wanted to explore the culture, particularly the sort of, you know, the older culture. And I wanted to explore, you know, the presence of the Hispanic community that actually has lived there as long as the rest of the community. But very often, you know, they take care of the land. They're the landscapers, the gardeners. And so I wanted to set up this kind of triangle between Lillian and Fred and Alejandro, who was her gardener, but they actually grew up together because he came with his family from Mexico when he was a child. So they're nearly like siblings. So that's how I got started on that.
Okay. So when she's a child, Genuine is able to heal her brother Andrew's broken leg.
Yes.
So why can't she heal her other brother Lars after his car accident?
She doesn't know. And I don't think she'll ever find out. It's like this. It doesn't always work. You know, and I'm sorry for Lars. You know, but it's one of those things where I had to expose the fact that it wasn't, she's not perfect, mm-hmm. you know, and also that it brings her to her knees basically and starts this whole existential crisis about who she is and what she does. If she could heal people for money all these years, why can't she heal her brother? And she doesn't know. And it's a turning point for her.
Mm-hmm.
It turns her relation, you know, it's a turning point for her relationship with Kevin, because he wants her to quit healing, and she doesn't want to quit healing, but she quits healing after Lars dies, for a while anyway, because she wants to know what's wrong with her, you know, that she can't perform this at will.
Mm-hmm.
And why it works sometimes and sometimes it doesn't.
So, Susan, it sounds to me like you're not quite done with these characters, that you're still writing stories about people. Why didn't you wait and tell us all? No, I'm going to have to go searching through journals to see when you publish something to find out what happens.
I think it's part of this sort of things that's happened in my sort of the publishing process. So I wrote these stories and I made the collection. They were mostly complete for my master's thesis. And then I started shopping them around and I didn't really get anywhere. I was told by a few, you know, really quite good agents that it would be too hard to sell them as short stories, and they weren't quite a novel, and for whatever reason. And then Fairfield University has a book prize biannually every other year. And so I wrote some more of the story. So I fleshed it out and then I submitted it in 2015. And I was like one of the top five shortlists, but I didn't win. I submitted it again in 2017 and I won. And because I won that prize, New Rivers Press, which is a university press with Minnesota State at Moorhead, published it. So part of my prize was getting a publishing contract.
Yes, the page about New Rivers Press in the back of your book. It's so interesting for students and everybody, people learning the business, to get experience. It's wonderful.
It is. They have a great thing. They have an undergraduate program for publishing. So the students get to work on editing and cover design and, you know, layout and all that. They learn all these great skills. So they did a lot of work on my book. And then it goes on to the senior editors, you know, and the managing editor to finish up before it got published. But back to why I haven't written more yet. So in 2014, sort of in between this, I started my PhD in creative writing at Bath Spa University in the UK. And so for my dissertation, I'm writing a novel that's completely different from the Genuine stories. And so as soon as I finish this, I have a lot of stories in my head about Genuine that I want to write. So
okay,
that's my plan.
We're going to get note to everyone. We're going to get more on Genuine. But I was going to ask you the traditional new book question. What are you working on now, or what's next for you? But you're working on a PhD now.
I am. And so part of the PhD is a novel. And my title is I Remember, I Forget.
Okay.
And it's about a woman who's starting to lose her memory right before she turns 60. And she basically tells the long story of her love for her husband, who died in his early 40s in a snowy car crash. Mm. And she recounts that story to him, and also, you know, the lives of their children, because it's left this huge impression that, you know, they were young, they were in love. And 3 months after the crash, he found out he'd been off somewhere having an affair.
Oh.
And she could never find out with who. And she didn't want to tell her children. So she's lived this life basically where this hero, you know, lost father, you know, has hurt her really deeply. And it's a struggle for her. And she gets over it. But when she starts losing her memory and she starts losing bits of herself and she's finally coming to sort of grips with who she is and, you know, how she wants to live her life now that her children are grown, she turns back to her husband to address this whole issue. Were we really in love? Did we have this? And then, yes, of course, we had this and we had this and we had this. So, and then the second part is when she starts to forget, and that'll be kind of in the present tense.
Okay, so you're well into this book.
Oh, yeah, I'm well into it. I'm on my third draft, actually.
Ah, okay, good. So let me know when you're done. It's just been a pleasure talking to you, Susan. Thank you so much for joining me today on this podcast of the New Books Network.
Oh, thank you, Galit. It's always a pleasure for me to talk about Genuine. I can't wait to get back to her.
And thank you for joining me today. Again, this is G.P. Gottlieb, host of New Books in Literature for the New Books Network, and I've been speaking to Susan Smith Daniels about her new book, The Genuine Stories. Join the network to learn about books of all kinds and to hear my previously recorded podcasts. Goodbye until my next conversation for the New Books Network.